on verse 98. And for whoever will meditate upon the Guru in this manner, wisdom will rise from its own accord. Thus, one should maintain the attitude that I am liberated because of the true Guru. Remember, there is nothing more than the Guru. 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 This alone is Shiva. This alone is Shiva. This is my instruction. This is my instruction. Whoever will meditate upon the Guru in this manner, wisdom will rise of its own accord. And here we find that whenever you're in the presence of divinity and you're afforded the privilege of living and studying and being in the presence of divinity, wisdom will rise of its own accord. That is the wisdom. We get the privilege of having such an association. That's the wisdom. Wisdom will rise of its own accord. Thus, one should maintain the attitude that I am liberated because of the true Guru. By means of the path of the intuitive vision of the Guru, mind should be made pure. The impermanent and other divisions should not be a bondage to the soul. Let the mind be filled with the wisdom of the intrinsic nature of all that is knowable. The intrinsic nature of all that is knowable is divinity, supreme divinity. The Guru resides in all. Let the mind be filled with the wisdom of the intrinsic nature of all that is knowable. Realize wisdom is one with that which is knowable. Other than this, there is not a second path. Every object of perception, everything that is knowable, is a representative of the highest wisdom. It's all the manifestation of supreme divinity. That's the realization we seek, and that's the path by which we attain that realization. Other than this, there is not a second path. O great goddess, whoever spreads or listens to gossip about the Guru will remain in the deepest conflict so long as the moon and sun shine. Because to disparage the Guru is to disparage the supreme divinity. And what is your goal? To be one with the supreme divinity in the highest respect. So leave all the gossip out of your lives, because it will get you nowhere. Especially around here, leave all the gossip, because it will only bring you conflict. So long as the body may remain, remember your Guru as a worshipful God. Do not give up the Guru, even if he moves according to his own rhythm. How can you give up the supreme divinity and still call yourself spiritual? So don't give up the Guru, because then you're giving up the search. You can expand the definition of Guru until it becomes one with all of creation. But don't give up the Guru, because in giving up the Guru, you give up your spiritual pursuit. Intelligent disciples should never speak lies or untruth with egotism. Always speak truth before the Guru. One who speaks to the Guru with egotism to attain victory in argument may become a Brahmarakshas, a demon filled with the pride of learning in a forest or a place with no water. O Parvati, the Guru can protect a disciple even cursed by a Muni, a celestial being, or even the gods, and even saves him or her from the fear of time and death. Without energy are the gods and others. Without energy are the Munis as well. Because of the curse by the Guru, they may quickly become exhausted. Of this, there is no doubt. O goddess, this is the king of mantras, Guru, comprised of two letters, Gu and Ru. The Puranas and the Vedas define the meaning of Guru as the actual supreme amongst the highest. Only those who perform selfless expressions of love for the Guru have understood the wisdom of the Vedas and the Puranas. They have attained to sannyas, the establishment of truth within. Others are merely making a pretense of renunciation. It doesn't matter what cloth you wear, and it doesn't matter what tilak you wear, and how many rudraksha beads you wear. If you're not performing selfless service as an expression of your love and respect for the guru, then I'm only making a pretense of renunciation. We have to work for the guru sincerely, as an offering, as an expression of love. Otherwise, we haven't understood what the scriptures are talking about. We're just making a pretense of renunciation. The eternal supreme divinity beyond form and attributes is known as the supreme. Within all is the inexplicable supreme divinity, just as all lights are illuminated by one light. This supreme divinity, the supreme guru, resides within all. The guru gives the prasad of grace, defined as what you do is what you get, by which the individual soul is perceived. By means of this path of the guru, the wisdom of one's own soul arises. I bow to he who alone manifests the universe of that which moves and moves not. From Brahma, the supreme divinity, to a blade of grass, he is the intrinsic nature of the supreme soul of existence. I worship true existence, consciousness and bliss, beyond all distinctions, always as my guru. He is eternal, full, complete, and perfect, beyond attributes, without qualities. He resides in harmony with her own soul. Meditate upon that being who is higher than the highest. She is the cause of eternal bliss. She resides within the space of your heart and illuminates the purest clarity. Just as one sees in a mirror the clear reflection of the image which stands before it, just so, uniting so and hum, nature and consciousness, in the ultimate bliss, the individual soul is the reflection of infinite consciousness. Listen as I speak of that full, complete, and perfect conscious being, the Purush, which is meditated upon as the size of a thumb within the heart, where he gives rise to an attitude of awareness of bhava. Parvati, he is imperceptible and unknowable without name or form. There is no word by which the intrinsic nature of supreme divinity can be known. Just as scent is the intrinsic nature of camphor and various flowers, and hot and cold and others are various intrinsic natures in existence, just so supreme divinity is without end. When one sees all manifested existence as his own, and he alone is established everywhere, then the perception of worms and bees and other objects of nature becomes the meditation of tat, of that, as in tat tvam asi. That is, anything you perceive, any object of nature, any object of creation, it's all the guru. It's all tat. It's all the supreme divinity, as in tat tvam asi, that thou art, the highest divinity. Everything you perceive becomes that. When one sees all manifested existence as his own, and he alone is established everywhere, then the perception of worms and bees and other objects of nature becomes the meditation of that, as in Tat Tvam Asi. When one meditates upon the Guru, he himself becomes the manifestation of Supreme Divinity. He is liberated in Pinda, in the consecrated offering, Poda, the sacred syllables, and in Rup, the form. Of this there is no doubt. Let's go find out about Pinda, Poda, and Rup. The respected Parvati asked, "What is a consecrated offering, Pinda, O great Lord? And what are the syllables, the Poda, that rise in the heart? What is beyond form and what is form? O Shamkar, cause of peace, please explain this to me." The respected great Lord replied, "The consecrated offering is the energy known as Kundalini. The syllables that rise in the heart are hum and sa. Form is known as the bindu, one-pointed awareness, and that which is beyond form is infinite. O giver of boons, liberation is attained in consecrated offerings. Liberation is attained in sacred syllables. Liberation is attained in form. Liberation is attained also in that which is beyond form. Who resides in the liberation beyond form is liberated without a doubt." So here he's saying that whatever, what we're offering, the real thing that we're offering is our Kundalini, the energy within. That's the offering. Every object is merely a conveyance of energy. And we're not really interested in offering the things, we're offering the energy. And the greatest of all the offerings of energy is to bring that lady up, Kundalini, from the Muladhar, bring her up to the Sahasrar, where she joins with Shiva. And Shiva and Shakti. We talk about Panchmakar, the offering of the five M's, which is monks, much, Madera, Mudra, and Moitun, the five articles of offering in Tantra that begin with M. They're often translated as meat, fish, wine, parched grains, and sexual intercourse. And the real meaning, it is, the meat is the form. And the much are the fish that swim in the Ganga and the Jamuna, in the Ira and the Pingala. By doing pranayama and fixing our vision on the form, we're consuming the first two ingredients. Madeira, the wine, is the bliss, the joy, the nectar of blissful delight that we get when we are focused in the pranayama. Mudra is the parched grain, which is the fruit of the earth. We're one with the earth, and we become united with all of the earth. We forget about ourselves and our bodies, and our body merges into the earth. We become one of the fruits of the earth. Focusing on the form, performing the pranayama, drinking the nectar of immortal bliss, we become one with the earth. We become the fruit of the earth. And the union between the masculine and female principles is bringing Kundalini on the yatra from the Muladhara to the Sahasrara, and let her unite with Shiva. This is the meaning of the tantric offering of the Panchmakar, or the five M's. Now, here we have the consecrated offering is Kundalini, the goddess. And the syllables that rise in the heart are Hum and Sa, Purush and Prakriti, the masculine and feminine principles. Form is the bindu, because any form has the capacity to be the focus of our attention. And one-pointed awareness. Form is known as the bindu, one-pointed awareness, and that which is beyond form is infinite. So rupatit, that which is beyond form, of course, can't be measured. Now, liberation is attained in the consecrated offering, in the offering of the energy. Liberation is attained in the sacred syllables, hum, sa, pranayam. Liberation is attained in the form, focusing one-pointed attention. Liberation is attained in that which is beyond form, nirakar, nirguna. Who resides in the liberation without beyond form is liberated without a doubt. And here we have the distinction between bhava samadhi, savikalpa samadhi, and nirvikalpa samadhi. And who attains to nirvikalpa without an idea beyond form, without duality, is liberated without a doubt. All that is perceivable in manifested existence is his own. He perceives the highest principle of existence. He sees the higher than the highest and no other which resides in all. Everything that we perceive is a manifestation of the higher than the highest, and that's how we relate to it. After attaining that blessing which is beyond the worlds, one becomes free from attachment. One becomes fixed in infinite peace. Whether attained or unattained, whether small or large, whether without desire may enjoyment, or only without desire may enjoyment be had, always being satisfied with the manifestations of consciousness. The only time we enjoy is when we're free from desire. Because every time there's some desire, there's an expectation. And there's a qualification of the perception. We are perceiving or conceiving, measuring how much are we enjoying this in relationship to our desire. The desire filters our perception. And we impose our own ideas on the activity so that only without desire can enjoyment be had. Everything that we enjoy in life, we enjoy to the extent that we're not there. Everything that's enjoyable is only enjoyable because I forget about myself. The good book I read was so good that I forgot about myself. The good movie I watched was great, so great that I identified with the character and forgot about little me. The meal that I enjoyed was so good because I got so into the sensations of taste, I wasn't there to enjoy it. Everything that I enjoy to the extent that I'm not there. And when I am there, it was a little bit of a pleasure. But if I'm not there, then I really liked it. In fact, that's what we're seeking in every pleasure, is the opportunity to escape from our little selves. And that's why it's pleasurable, because I'm not there. So only without desire may enjoyment be had, always being satisfied with the manifestations of consciousness. Whatever consciousness is perceiving, we're totally there.
We're talking about the jiva, who's the I, right? The little ego self is not there.
The little ego self is not there.
But one could say the converse, that one enjoys creation because I, the big self, is there, and that's who I identify with.
The big self is always there.
But you're identifying with it.
Well, right. We cease to identify with the little self. Yes, aham brahmashmi. Sure. It's semantical difference. The knowledgeable realize all wisdom as the union of the individual with all that is. He rejoices everywhere in eternal bliss and eternal peace. Wherever such a one is established, that place shines forth with merit. O goddess, the description of a liberated devotee has been explained by me. Wherever she is, that place shines forth with merit. It's true. If we were just sitting here, would all these people come? No way. She's here, so we come. O goddess, also instructions about the path of the guru to liberation, devotion to the guru, as well as meditation, all have been explained. O one of great mental capacity, Mahamate, now I shall enumerate the effects which come from this Guru Gita, these mantras. O goddess, for the benefit of the inhabitants of all the worlds, do not accept an attitude of worldliness. That's a really neat one. For the benefit of the inhabitants of all the worlds, do not accept an attitude of worldliness. That attitude of worldliness allows us to surrender our spiritual selves and succumb to the burdens of the world. Under no circumstances should any devotee accept an attitude of worldliness. I reject it. Totally reject it. Just do not. Remember the Shankaracharya's sadhana panchakam. Carry yourself like a great renunciate. Do not accept an attitude of worldliness. Protest. Those without wisdom who perform actions from worldliness move in the ocean of the gross world, whereas the wise maintain the attitude that all action is not action, even while doing. I am not the doer. Whoever, with an attitude of devotion, will recite or listen or bestow a writing of these mantras, all of these will produce fruit. O goddess, I have shared the pure principles of the soul of the Guru Gita. For the purpose of destroying the diseases of worldly existence, everyone should always recite as his own. That's pretty clear. Why else? We get this bhavarog, this disease of worldly existence, and we start to believe that I am burdened with the attitude of worldliness. And in order to expel that thought, everyone should chant the Guru Gita and maintain the highest devotion to the Guru, to the supreme divinity manifest in every aspect, in every form of creation. Even one letter of the Guru Gita is as a king of mantras. Even one letter of Sanskrit. We just talked about some of the letters of Sanskrit a little earlier today. They are the closest approximations of the vibrations contained in an attitude or object. That's what a letter is. Matrikas. Kshar means limit. Kshar. And A means without. And Akshar, which is a letter, means that which has no limit. The vibrations contained within the aksharas have no limit. Even one letter of the Guru Gita is as a king of mantras. Others of the myriad of mantras are not to be valued as the 16th part of one letter. By means of this recitation, one attains infinite rewards. By reciting the Guru Gita, one attains infinite fruits. all sin is nullified and all affliction is destroyed. It takes away the fear of time and death and destroys all adversity. It takes away the fear of celestial beings, demonic beings, various disembodied spirits, thieves and tigers. It completely takes away all great afflictions and gives rise to the attainment of blessings. Even the ability to hold still one's senses and control one's mind is possible for one who always recites. Of all the things, to hold one's senses still and to hold one's mind still is possible for one who recites. Remember in the Kilak Stav, in the Chandi, we have Dadati Pratigri Nati Nanati Prasidati Itahang Rupi Nakilena Mahadevanakilatam. As he gives, so does he receive. And this is the form of the pin by which all of these mantras have been bound by the great God. For one who recites, he clearly removes the pin. For one who always recites, he has even the capacity to hold the senses still, to hold one's own mind still. By reciting while sitting on a cloth, one becomes beset with affliction. Sitting on a stone gives rise to sickness. By sitting on the earth, one becomes pained, and upon wood, it bears no fruit. By reciting while sitting upon a black deer skin brings the attainment of wisdom, and upon a tiger skin, self-realization, and upon a seat of kusha grass brings the attainment of wisdom, and upon a blanket brings the attainment of all. No ceremony is required. Don't have to make it fancy. Just upon a blanket, get up from your bed and sit on your blanket and remember the Guru as the manifestation of Supreme Divinity. What a privilege it is to have this wisdom. What a privilege it is to have this insight. We have a path by which we can extricate ourselves from the attitude of worldliness. Do not accept an attitude of worldliness. O goddess, one should cover kush grass or durva grass with a white blanket, and then, O goddess, he should recite with one mind. O beloved, one should meditate on the color white for the objective of peace, and upon the seed of red to attain self-control. To remove ethereal spirits, meditate upon the color black. To bring wealth, meditate upon the color yellow. And I think we'll stop here. Do you have any questions about what we've covered so far? We call kripa. The word kripa is grace. That's how it's generally defined in English. Actually, kri means coral. Pa means pal. Kri means to do. And pa means to get. And the etymology of the word kripa, the grace of the guru, the grace of God, is what you do is what you're going to get. That same keel, the same pin that by which Mahadev bound the mantras of the Chandi is kripa. As you sow, so shall you reap. And once you understand that, we're going to take great pains to sow the right thing, so that we're going to get the fruit of our karma. We're going to enjoy the fruit of our karma, whether we like it or not. So therefore, we might as well do good karma.
So this is what you sow, so shall you reap in general in creation, not in terms of your action or attitude.
Every action that we perform, whether it be the relationship with the guru or the relationship with the guru's creation, we will get, the grace is, we're going to get the fruit of our karma. And if you understand that, we'll do the best karma that we possibly can so that we get the best fruit that we possibly deserve. That's the grace. Once we have that fixed in our hearts, then we want to work with sincerity to demonstrate the pure love and that we have for the guru. We want to perform selfless service as an expression of love, to serve the guru.
And then how does that relate to people's sort of grace of the guru can bring one to realization?
It's true. The grace of the guru is, how do I relate to my guru? The guru gives me grace. She's going to give me the fruit of my karma. If I surrender to her fully, she'll fill me full. And if I come to the guru with filled with my own attitudes and desires and request her to fulfill them for me, she probably won't. So the grace is, what I do is what I'm going to get. How I relate to her. If I relate to her as the supreme amongst the highest, she will give me the grace. She'll give me the fruit of that karma. And if I relate to her as a nice lady from India, she'll give me that the fruit of that karma. That's the grace.
And what about the notion of a guru taking away
bad karma? Definitely the guru will take away your bad karma if you come to the guru with the sense of reverence as you would coming to the Supreme Divinity. You've automatically left all your bad karma away. If you come to the guru with the highest respect, you lose all your karma. If you come to the guru saying, hey, guru, I got this to take care of and that to take care of and this to take care of, what do you recommend? Guru will probably say, I recommend you go out and take care of it. But if you come to the guru with a sense of awe and privilege, of filling yourself full of wisdom, of light, of inspiration. I am privileged to be in the presence of the Supreme Divinity, made manifest in my Guru. Then we'll make ourselves into disciples, into shishas, into mirrors which reflect the purity and clarity of the Guru. We begin to sit the way she sits, breathe the way she breathes, chant the way she chants, occupy our minds with the things that she occupies her minds with. Like the Guru Gita. We one day become the Guru. And that's the path of the Guru. And if you regard your guru as a nice guy or a nice lady, then you'll get the fruit of that karma. And if you regard your guru as, what a privilege to be in the presence of Supreme Divinity. I have an opportunity to change my life entirely. Then you'll open your vessel to be filled. And as soon as that happens, that's the grace. That's the greatest grace. As soon as we open up and say, fill me, that's the grace. That sense of surrender, that attitude of surrender, doesn't allow an attitude of worldliness. So that's what this song of the guru is telling us. Are there other questions? Right. It is getting technical, and there were it was customary to search for these kinds of skins to sit on, to use as your asan, and I'll never forget one time some fancy guru got in my car in Delhi, and He put down a deer skin on the seat before he would sit down on it, you know, because he didn't want to defile his bottom just sitting on it. I thought that was pretty weird. He wasn't going to meditate. He was driving across town, you know. What a guy! Who are you showing off to, man? had to put his deer skin down so he could sit on the car, because he always sat on his deer skin. That was going a little too far. So some people become affected by it, and they make a display and a demonstration of their piety, and that's not what we're talking about here. These various skins that you can sit on, these are all indicative. For example, you meditate on the color white for peace, and red for self-control, yellow for wealth, and black to control any inimical spirit or energies that are seem to be in enmity or in breach of harmony. All of the siddhis can be attained by sitting on a blanket. And so the necessity of going out and finding a black antelope skin is really diminished. When you read the next verse, it says that you can do it all sitting on a white blanket. I've chosen white wool. That's most auspicious as well, white wool. And then you get all the benefits. So I wouldn't suggest everybody go out and buy a new asan. I would suggest everybody train your ass to sit down rather than worry about the asan that you're sitting. Are there any other questions? Well, if all goes well, I think we could finish this tomorrow night, and then... tomorrow will be Saturday, won't it? No.
Sometimes we talk about this, and
that Tatwamasi.
Well, the way you describe the tradition I've trained in, I think what you're discussing here is what we call Brahman consciousness. You say when you have this Mahavakya Tatwamasi,
mm-hmm.
and you really realize that your guru would say it to you, you go into a state called Brahman consciousness, where you're one with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly the same. You become one with that, as in tat tvamasi.
So that everything you see, you realize is yourself. Is yourself identified as big self?
Yeah, as yourself. Right. You move away from the little self. There are four Vedas: Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sam Veda, and Atharva Veda. And from each of the four Vedas has come forth one Mahavakya, it's called, a general principle, with one statement of principle which summarizes the essence, conveys the essence of that Veda. So we have from... we have from the Rig Veda, the Mahavakya, the great statement, Mahavakya, the great statement in summary, Prajnanam Brahma. Pra means before. The wisdom which was before is the Supreme Divinity. Pra also means Prakriti, the wisdom of nature, is the supreme wisdom, is the supreme divinity. Prajnanam Brahma. From the Ajurveda comes Tat Tvam Asi, that thou art. That's what you are. That highest divinity, that supreme wisdom. From Atharva Veda comes I am Atma Brahma. This individual soul is the Supreme Divinity. And from Shambheda comes Aham Brahmashmi. I am the Supreme Divinity. So when you put the four of them together, the four Mahabhakyas, be the four great statements of definition of the intrinsic principles contained within the Vedas that they are explaining, they make a really nice poem. It says, Prajñam Brahma. Tat Tvam Asi, I am Atma Brahma, Aham Brahmashmi. And it says, though the wisdom of nature is the Supreme Divinity, that is what you are. This individual soul is the Supreme Divinity, and I am one with God. I am the Supreme. And that's the essence of the Vedas. Those are the essential characters of each of the four Vedas. Those are the Mahavakyas. So, Tat Tvamasi is that's what you are. That Supreme Divinity is what you are. It was just expounded upon by the Brahma Sutras. Any other questions?
Did you say that worldliness, when mentioned over and over again, it just could be explained as selfishness and egotism? Or, you know, would say, just cut out worldliness, don't accept worldliness, just selfishness and egotism?
Very good. Very good. Let's start there. I'm sure we'll find many other extensions to the definition, but that's a wonderful place to start. Just cut out the selfishness and egotism and look at every bindu, at every form, as the Supreme Divinity. What can I offer? How can I offer my energy to that form? I want to let the Supreme Divinity know how privileged I am to be in her presence. What can I offer to her every form? It's not enough for me to say, I love you, I love you, I love you. Someday I'm going to have to get up and do something to demonstrate that love. Let today be the day I'm going to do something for God. What shall I do? Whatever it is, every action that we perform. This is the way I'm demonstrating my love for God. Now I have some criteria by which to discriminate. Does this action really demonstrate my love for God? Or is it filled with selfishness and egotism? Before, I had no criteria by which to adjudicate. I could do any old action I wanted to. Now, I'm sort of stuck because I have criteria. As soon as I say I have a destination, then I have a path. As long as I didn't have a destination, I could go anywhere I wanted to. Once you know where you're trying to go, it's sort of incumbent upon you to follow the route. Now I know that my objective is to demonstrate the highest respect and love and sincerity and absence of worldliness, selfishness, and egotism in every action that I perform. Well, this is saying it's in every object, every atom of existence. It's all the Supreme Divinity. It's all the form. She said it right where she talked about, yes, the form is known as the bindu, one-pointed awareness. And the form is everywhere. There's form. Every form is one-pointed awareness.